you know what? That's the wrong music, but who cares? We got History Matters here with Scott Washington. History guru. Yeah, yeah. Let me play the actual song. There we go.
I thought maybe
they're
we're
right next to each other on this thing.
I thought maybe it was going to be Bob Dylan, you know, because today is his birthday.
Today is Bob Dylan's birthday, yes.
Yeah. I remember hearing...
Well, let's go back. I just screwed up. History Matters with History Scott Matters. Washington. History
guru
taking a look back at this week in history. Hey, remember that time when I screwed up and hit the wrong button and Heroic Horns played instead of the Masterpiece Theater?
Those days.
Yeah. Today is Bob Dylan's birthday.
It is. Yeah. It is birthday. I mean, you know, that's a significant element of the kind of history we cover, which is cultural and it's... Of course, state and national history. Mm-hmm. But then there are these elements, people who are in the arts that have made such a difference and in a profound way. I remember hearing Bob Dylan in Winston-Salem, and he was playing at some amphitheater, but it was just, it sounded, when you're just listening with your ears,
right.
Horrible. But the key was to put your fingers in the ears, and then everything was perfect. And the balance was great. You could hear him.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you took your fingers out, no. It was just
really
loud.
Oh, just like the acoustics and everything.
They just bounced all over the place.
I've had that experience where you go to a place or a club and the acoustics are bad and all you hear is reverb and feedback. But if you plug your ears, that's actually a good strategy.
Yeah, it is.
I was wondering if it was like, if you plug your ears and just forget about the music and just imagine that this
imagine
is back when
singing.
Dylan still had a voice.
Yeah, well, I would not recommend people do that as they're driving. That's not a good idea. Don't drive and put your fingers in your ears.
So he is 77 years old.
I know, isn't
today.
That something?
Yeah, incredible.
And really made such a difference, and I mean just phenomenally, in how musicians write songs, and of course during the Vietnam era and after that. I mean, just it's hard to overestimate his impact.
Yeah, and it's not even the writing of the songs, it's the singing of the songs,
yes.
Because he kind of notoriously doesn't have a classically trained singing voice, but that doesn't mean it's a bad voice. He's got an amazingly expressive and emotional voice, and I remember, I think I was reading a piece about Bob Dylan, or a piece about the greatest vocalists of all time, and they had Dylan mentioned, and the story that they told was Sam Cooke, who is one of the great soul voices of all time, and just a fantastic, trained, like excellent voice and emotional and terrific. Heard Bob Dylan sing for the first time with that kind of nasally, twangy. Yeah. Heard Bob Dylan sing for the first time and said, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That completely changes
that's
the
right.
game, because now it's no longer going to be about how well you can
that's
sing.
Right.
It's going to be about how well you can feel and
that's
believe
right.
the words
that
you're singing.
That's
yeah.
right. That really becomes a major turning point. I agree with you.
Yeah. No, it wasn't me who said it. It was somebody else, but it was a good point.
Well, whoever it was.
And I get to make it now, because whoever wrote it isn't in the
didn't
room.
Didn't you do the theme to Masterpiece Theater, too?
Oh, yeah. How does that song go?
I don't
go?
Think so, no.
Oh, there we go.
Let's see. There's, in terms of, also, since we had, of course, the royal wedding.
Yes.
We at least should
talking about
that,
mine, right?
Yes, I am. It was a great wedding. It was superb. It was historic. It was just one of the best. And of course,
some people in Britain got married,
well,
too.
Well, they did. They got earlier in the day. They thought they'd get in earlier, but I'll tell you that I think yours topped it for sure.
Thank you.
Victoria, Queen Victoria, was actually born on today, May 24th, who becomes later, of course, Queen of England.
Queen Victoria,
199
years ago or so. We'll be talking about her 200th birthday next
that's
year.
That's right. And she actually set the standard for the wedding march was first used, first used for the first time. Yeah.
Okay.
And wearing white, that was something that was also, she kind of was the trailblazer on that.
Interesting.
Which is, you know, these are kind of things like, haven't we always done that? And apparently no. Yeah. And later on, she would actually lead a couple of her nieces and escort them down the aisle when they didn't have a father figure to do that, which is, you know, kind of...
It is interesting that these traditions develop with Queen Victoria's wedding because, I mean, on the one hand, it's understandable, and it's the queen getting married, and it's this is back in the day when the monarchy meant something in England.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like fodder for the cover of People magazine. They had a significant amount of power. So right. Queen Victoria getting married, it's a big deal. But people didn't have TV back in the 1800s. So, and we've talked about this, the extent to which like it's hard to communicate things quickly across long distances. People don't get to sit there at home and watch the entire royal wedding. So. You don't get to hear that music as she's walking down the aisle and say, oh, that music, I want that at my wedding.
That's right.
I wonder how it spread then, because most people who later had the wedding march at their wedding would never have heard it at Queen Victoria's.
Well, we can only imagine
but
that it would be the journalists
who now we,
you know, as historians would look at and go, these are firsthand accounts. And because even you think when she... got married when she was very young, there wasn't even photography to document
it, which is totally different today.
So. Yeah. And a good thing.
Marriage in the age of mechanical reproduction.
Well, here's another.
Two people got that.
Yeah. The impact of women. I've got to at least point this one out. that was good.
Yeah.
On May 25th, 1673, a woman named Anne Durant became the first woman to act in the capacity of an attorney in North Carolina. Now, this is just a little fascinating chapter of North Carolina's history, and she represented person Andrew Ball in his successful attempt to recover wages due to him. Can you imagine an employment case?
Yeah, I know. Imagine employers trying to...
Well, thank God it's the 21st century.
Wage theft. We've never had
that in North
Carolina.
So there is the contemporary reference to that's been in the news. And then apparently she did this many other times. And when her husband was off and away doing his thing, she managed the estate and still managed to raise 9 children. So she really was a multitasking pioneer here at a time when that wasn't necessarily done. In fact, there is some evidence to suggest that on their tract, because it's so early, that some of the first public structures in North Carolina were built, though they were prisoners being brought to be put in stocks and pillories.
Oh, good.
But still, you know, that's kind of a nice thing. Oh, yes, this is the place. I don't think any of those survived, but I think that's what they were doing. So that I think that's kind of an at least noteworthy.
All right.
Also, another one is an author who was born on May 24th, 1923, from Moore County. Her name was Lula Vollmer, and she wrote plays. In fact, she wrote one play called Sunup, and on May 24th, 1923, it premiered on Broadway.
Awesome.
And it depicted people of the Southern Mountain region. We might call it Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
But she donated royalties of more than $40,000 to help educate them. Now, isn't that, I think that's just a great story of knowing that that happens here, and here's another significant person we probably don't hear a lot about. Here's one we have heard about. May 23rd, 1934, a fellow named Robert Arthur Moog is born. He becomes an American inventor and creates the Moog synthesizer. And, of course, over in Durham, they have the Moog Festival.
Moog Fest.
So,
I think it's Moog, isn't
Moog,
it?
Moog.
I think it's Moog.
Moog.
It's spelled Moog, yeah.
Moog. Yeah, well, that's kind of interesting to see. Here's somebody looking at musical instruments. We have Bob Dylan to now the Moog synthesizer.
The Moog synthesizer. And between the two of them, like imagine like the transformation of American music. Like things had already been transforming quite a bit in the 50s and on into the early 60s.
That's
and
right.
Then along comes Bob Dylan and completely changes the game in terms of songwriting, in terms of what you can write about, in terms of how you should be expressing music with your voice. And then along comes Robert Moog with a synthesizer, and now that
electronic
opens up
music,
new possibilities for how you can record.
And how that is, people can record symphonies without leaving the comfort of their home, and which is just fascinating to see how musical instruments have evolved. And or what we deem is musical has changed as well.
Speaking with Scott Washington this week in history. So speaking of technology kind of transforming things, let's talk about today, the first telegraph message ever, right?
Oh, let's
Samuel
see.
Morse.
Yes, Samuel Morse. That's right. And the first message was, "What hath God wrought from Washington to Baltimore?" And I, you know, that's just an amazing thing. We don't think about the telegraph machine as being so central, but it is.
It's also good to know that some things never change. People standing in the middle of Washington, D.C., looking around and going, what on earth is going on here?
Well, there's another kind of an interesting bit of history that happens where we are. Okay, this one is probably, a lot of people may not know about this. 1849, a patent was issued, a patent on May 22nd, 1849, number 6469, and it's for a product called Improvement for Buoying Vessels Over Shoals. And it's actually like an inflatable bladder, so a ship could get up over shallows. But the interesting thing is not so much the product, which was used up in Nantucket, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. It's the person who did it.
The man from Nantucket?
That's well, I don't know if there were rhymes about this particular fellow, but his name, he becomes the only U.S. president to hold a patent. 1849, you're saying, well, who is that? And his name is, and you know him better, as Abraham Lincoln.
Ooh, and now you know the rest of the story. I think there were poems written about Abraham Lincoln.
Maybe so. I think that's kind of a really interesting and very unusual kind of thing that I just don't think of. Abraham Lincoln being a person who did that, but there's another one too, and this week is May 23rd, 1785, when another invention is that's actually been more used more often by their bifocals, those glasses where you have an upper and lower lens, and anybody who uses them says, oh, thank goodness, mm-hmm. especially for reading. And the person who invented that was none other than Ben Franklin,
yes. And that really sort of underscores how like Renaissance-y you had to be back in those days. Like you have Abraham Lincoln, who's politician, attorney, and invents this device. You've got Benjamin Franklin, who is printer, journalist, author, local gadabout, philanthropist, inventor, scientist, politician, diplomat, and everything else. Thomas Jefferson, same thing.
Yes.
Thomas Paine is one of my favorite stories too. He was the pamphleteer who sparked revolution in two different countries, in America and France, with Common Sense and Rights of Man. He wanted to be famous for inventing this bridge, like this design for a bridge that he had come up with. Super proud of this bridge. No one remembers him for it today, but he really wanted to go down in history as the inventor of this new style of bridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And, of course, Hamilton.
You
might say he invented our currency or our banking system. I think that's pretty good. It's still standing today, and that's kind of remarkable.
I hear at age 14, they placed him in charge of a trading charter.
Is that right? Oh, that's right. Well, then you've been listening to the musical.
Yes, a little bit.
Well, but Lincoln, the reason why he did, how you were thinking of Illinois, but actually he, as I recall, worked on a riverboat at one point, mm-hmm. and so it would run aground. And so this is why he was thinking, how do we get them up over them?
Yeah.
But it actually became very practical up in Nantucket because they did have storms with blowing sand. And this was used to lift vessels up when it became too shallow. It wasn't used a lot, but they have a model of that at the museum there in Nantucket as well. So, kind of interesting little tidbit of history.
Very cool. All right, got Scott Washington here in the studio. What else do we got?
Well,
the Great Smoky Mountains National Park established this week.
Yes, and I think that's a really important one, and also Chimney Rock.
That's
on May 21st, 2007.
Yep.
Now, you know, that one's a relatively recent. You know, we're always dealing with colonial times or older than that. But it, only 2007, the state of North Carolina purchased Chimney Rock Park in western Rutherford County from the Morse family, which had owned and operated the tourist attraction for more than a century.
It was still a park that tourists visited,
it's just
a state park.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in fact, shortly after this, the General Assembly merged the 1,000-acre park with the neighboring Hickory Nut Gorge State Park and renamed it this entire 5,000, almost 6,000-acre Track Chimney Rock State Park.
People weren't going to Hickory Nut Gorge State Park.
I guess it didn't have quite the draw. And so they said, no.
I mean, okay.
There's
but,
something
you know.
In a name, I think. You know, if you said those glasses that you can look up and down, no. Bifocals seems a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still a little unwieldy.
I mean, hey, Robert Zimmerman was born on this date in 1941. And if he had been Robert Zimmerman his whole life, we may not know him today.
And how do we know him today?
Bob Dylan. There you go. Yeah. The name matters.
See, this is really the rest of the story. This is really a tribute.
Hickory Nut Gorge State Park.
I know.
What is the story of that name? I'm like,
I guess Hickory Nuts, but I'm not sure that. Let's go to the Hickory Nut Festival. I just don't know. And a gorge. Like, what do we do?
The gorge I can see, but like. Like, how does a name like that get established?
Like Majestic Gorge State Park.
Majestic Gorge State Park. Like two travelers are walking along the edge of the gorge,
right.
And one of them takes out his trail mix, and oh, I've dropped my hickory nuts. Oh, that's a great name for this
Down the gorge.
What
do we name this place? Well, let's always remember it. There is something in a name.
And then, like, years later, they're trying to tell the story to friends, and the one turns to the other and is like, what was the name of that one that you know, the Hickory
we'll
Nut
never
Gorge?
Forget
like,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. That Zimmerman kid, wasn't
stop
he up here?
Stop calling it Hickory Nut Gorge. This was 5 years ago.
Hey, George Zimmerman, what would you think of that? Should we name this Hickory Nut?
People tuning in right now have no idea what we're talking about.
I've always described this as a jazz riff on history.
we got time for one more. What
well,
do you
got? Well, here is along this line, ecological, and it's really kind of important. On May 27th, 1907, a woman is born. Her name is Rachel Louise Carson. She becomes an American biologist and conservationist, and her 1962 book, Silent Spring, alerted the nation to the dangers of pesticide and DDT, yep. And man, really, really got people to look at what was happening and helped to spur a whole environmental movement. And we have the Environmental Protection Agency comes under President Nixon, of all people, because of this. So yep. Now we're seeing some pushback of those very same regulations with I believe it's Scott Pruitt. And so that's of concern, because these are not just something over there. It's our oceans, it's our waters, it's our forests, and we need to keep those for future generations, too.
There you go. History matters, and so does the future.
That's
Scott
right.
Washington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.